You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code Locked On. You'll get 20% off your next order. Happy weekend, everybody. This is a special weekend edition of Locked On Wolves. Of course, this week we had a massive ice storm in Oklahoma City, so I didn't have power for a couple of days and was a little bit behind. So I thought I'd put up a weekend show here for you all for your weekend enjoyment or perhaps early Monday enjoyment. Hopefully you did have a great weekend if that's the case. And I wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of blockbuster trades suggested by Dan Favalli at Bleacher Report and put a bow on that conversation. There were three I talked about on Friday's show and then two others that I saved for today. And then I also want to get to number six on the Wolves Big Board 3.0 here at Locked On Wolves. We talked about five players, the first five players on the board. Today, I want to talk about number six. So before we get to all that, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you like to get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so blockbuster trades. This is, again, this is an article over at Bleacher Report by Dan Favalli. We talked about two of these blockbuster trade ideas. These are specific trade ideas for the number one pick, I should say. So the headline of the article is five blockbuster trade ideas for Minnesota Timberwolves' number one pick. I talked about three, and I didn't talk about them in order. I led off with some of the names that we've already talked about previously. So, you know, listen to Friday's show for the full thoughts on all of these options. One was the possibility of acquiring Aaron Gordon from the Orlando Magic. We've talked about that in the past. Another that we talked about was the Jrue Holiday idea from the New Orleans Pelicans. And then the last one we talked about is what Favalli called a three-team brain bender with Philly and Washington that would ultimately bring Ben Simmons to Minnesota, Bradley Beal to the Sixers, and a ton of stuff from Minnesota to the Wizards. So those are the three we talked about on Friday's show. Today, I want to focus on the other two. So first, let's talk about, I think this is my favorite one. It's actually pretty interesting. I've kind of been out on the idea of the Charlotte Hornets trading up to one for a couple of reasons. First of all, the Charlotte Hornets have the number three pick in this draft. There is kind of a consensus top three, or three players, I should say, in the top tier of draft prospects. And that's, in no particular order, LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman, and Anthony Edwards. Everyone knows the Wolves aren't going to take James Wiseman. They are likely going to trade the pick or draft Ball or Edwards. But the Hornets shouldn't really care. They don't have enough in Charlotte to be picky about which of the top tier players they're going to get. And they've been rumored to have been really interested in any of the three, but it shouldn't really matter. They can get Edwards, they could get Wiseman, they could get Ball. All three of those guys fit their roster. They don't have much to build around. I mean, Terry Rozier, PJ Washington, a couple of nice young players, but Devontae Graham would be another one on that team. But really, Edwards, Ball, Wiseman shouldn't matter. So I didn't think the Hornets would be all that interested in trading up to one. And then the other piece of it is, I don't think Charlotte has much on their roster for the same reason I don't think it matters who they draft that the Wolves should really be interested in. It's probably the, you know, arguably the worst roster talent of any team in the league. They don't have any superstars on that team. But I was actually pretty intrigued by this idea. And here's the trade. The Wolves would get PJ Washington in the number three pick. So they'd be trading back two selections. They'd be giving up the number one, the number 17 in this year's draft, Jake Lehman, and a 2022 second round pick, the more favorable from Denver or Philadelphia. So that must be a pick the Wolves had acquired. Actually, that's probably the one they got from Denver in this year's trade at the deadline. So I actually don't hate this. PJ Washington's, he was a rookie last year. He would actually be a really good fit with what the Wolves are trying to do. Next to Karl-Anthony Towns, it's hard to really find much of a better fit. I mean, he's only 6'7". But he's switchable on defense. He was actually arguably better defensively as a rookie than he was offensively. And he still shot 37.4% from three on four attempts per game. He didn't shoot the ball well from the free throw line, but he also didn't get to the free throw line that frequently. But being an above average 3-point shooter from the four position, being able to guard threes and fours and some fives on switches when necessary, I really think that Washington's a great fit next to Towns, and he's got a lot of room to improve as well. He just turned 22 in August and has only played 1 year in the league. He was the 12th overall pick just last year. So if the Wolves get PJ Washington and they're only giving up, I mean, I don't really know why they have to give up Jake Lehman in this trade other than Charlotte wants something else back. So, you know, I also Favalli mentions in the article that the Wolves could try and give up somebody like Omari Spellman instead. I mean, obviously, the Wolves would rather do that. I mean, Omari Spellman wants out anyways. In fact, he also mentions Jacob Evans. I mean, obviously, the Wolves have hopes for Jake Lehman to be part of the rotation this year, and they went out of their way to acquire him last year. So they'd clearly rather give up Evans or Omari Spellman, both who were part of the D'Angelo Russell deal this February. He notes the Wolves wouldn't give up Josh Okogie in this deal. Some might be opposed to giving up a first while moving out of number one because the Wolves are trading 1 and 17 to get 3. But you're getting the third pick, which is undoubtedly, I mean, I guess at that point you run the risk that it's James Wiseman, and then either you trade again and you trade the three and the ability to select Wiseman, or you take a Killian Hayes or an Obi Toppin or somebody else that I've talked about on the big board who could be a better fit in Minnesota than James Wiseman. So if the Wolves have to give up Lehman in this deal, you do it. But if you can do it for somebody besides him, like an Omari Spellman, then you'd much rather do that. And Spellman could kind of backfill that power forward role that PJ Washington's vacating. And the Hornets likely take Anthony Edwards first. So I guess the motivation for Charlotte here is only to pick up an extra first. And if they fall in love with somebody. So if they on their big board, if they have Anthony Edwards, we'll just say it's Edwards or Wiseman, whoever, you know, a half notch above the other two in the top tier, and they're going to pick up the 17th pick when they do it, why not trade up to one, get the 17th pick, maybe get an Omari Spellman or Jake Lehman back in this deal and get the guy that they really like. So this trade actually might make a lot of sense for both sides. I think you'd have to do some convincing with Charlotte, but if the Wolves could pick up PJ Washington and still draft either LaMelo Ball or a Killian Hayes or an Obi Toppin, I guess Toppin is less attractive at that point to the Wolves if they've already got PJ Washington. So you probably take one of the wings or guards. Or I guess if either Edwards or Ball slides to three at that point, you probably just take Anthony Edwards. If the Wolves think he's the best prospect on the board, although personally I would take Killian Hayes there. I mean, that's actually a really attractive trade in my mind, and one that the Timberwolves would seriously consider. With that pick, if you could truly land PJ Washington and only be giving up a 17 and sliding back two spots in this draft. So really interesting idea. Next, there's one other one with a team that I haven't really talked much about the possibility of the Wolves trading with, a Western Conference team that was not in the playoffs this year that we have not talked about as a potential trade partner. So we'll talk about that here next. Before we do that, let's talk about our title sponsor of today's show. That's Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market. In fact, it's the best tasting protein bar of all time. It tastes exactly like a candy bar. It's new and improved, more delicious than ever. New packaging, a new logo, and an all new taste. There were 12 original flavors. There's now 6 brand new flavors. They are caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Again, it's a protein bar, but it tastes just like a candy bar. It's covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew. Perfect if you're health conscious, if you're trying to lose or maintain weight while still indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are all low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and perfect for a keto diet. Right now, for a limited time only, you will get a free cooler with your purchase, but only while supplies last. Go to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. Okay, the last fake blockbuster trade by Dan Favalli at Bleacher Report deals with a Western Conference team we haven't talked about much before as a potential trade partner. That's the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying I don't think the Spurs would be too interested in this, and I actually don't think the Wolves would be either. I just think it's interesting because it's one we haven't really discussed before. So here's the deal. It would be Minnesota sending the number one pick, of course, along with James Johnson and the number 17 to the Spurs. They'd get back Rudy Gay, who's an expiring deal after this year, Keldon Johnson, the Spurs' first-round pick from last year, Derek White, and the Spurs' number 11 pick. This trade, to me, is another one of those, like, you could get your head around it. It's like the floor of a deal if you're going to deal the number one pick. but it's really hard to accept the idea of trading the number one pick for a 34-year-old on an expiring deal, last year's 29th pick, then this year's number 11, and then Derek White, who's a really good player, but unlikely he becomes, you know, the third star of the Timberwolves. And I actually don't think his fit with D'Angelo Russell is quite perfect, although it's good. And I think if you're doing this deal, you better think you're finding the perfect fit next to your star point guard and your all-star big man. I guess let's go through this piece by piece. So Rudy Gay is a really good fit next to Karl-Anthony Towns, even 2021 Rudy Gay. Now he's a rental and he's not a star anymore, but he is a solid fit with Towns and, you know, defensively brings a lot to the table still, can guard multiple positions, can still stretch the floor somewhat, is a smart player. So I think that works. That checks out as an okay move. In fact, not all that different than having James Johnson. They're slightly different players, but a similar type fit. Keldon Johnson, well, actually, let's talk about Derek White first. So Derek White is a really interesting player in that he mostly ran the point for the Spurs last year. This year, he played off the ball a lot more often and continues to improve. I mean, he's a solid defender. He's better at guarding. He seemed to be better guarding two guards previously than he did this year when he was on the ball more often defensively. But he averaged over 11 points a game this year, as well as 3.5 assists. And again, is good defensively. He's a 36% career three-point shooter, including 36.6% this year, which was up almost 3 percentage points from his second season in the league. He is 25. He actually just turned 26 over the summer and only has a year left on his rookie deal, which is the trickiest piece of this, is that he would become a free agent and he's eligible for an extension. It's not quite clear yet how much. He wasn't even quite a full-time starter last year for the Spurs, but again, continues to improve and can clearly play off the ball, is a versatile player. He's not huge. He's only 6'4", but defensively, him and D'Angelo Russell together, White would take the tougher cover. They could hide him on teams with weaker point guards. He could guard the point guard, they could hide Russell and allow White to take the tougher cover in the backcourt. And you put another, you know, defensive-minded wing out there, Jarrett Culver, Josh Okogie, whoever. And now two of your three guys on the wing and in the backcourt are solid defenders. So there's a lot to be said for that. He's also an above-average three-point shooter. And really would just be, he's a very solid above-average starter. Maybe, you know, has a ceiling of making an all-star game or two in the next few years, but he's already about to hit his prime and he hasn't averaged more than 11 points a game. Now, he hasn't been asked to do much more with the Spurs. He only started 20 games last year in San Antonio, but he's effectively the centerpiece of this deal. And that to me is somewhat hard to really wrap my mind around. Keldon Johnson was the 29th pick in last year's draft and slid a little bit from where everybody thought his draft stock would be initially. He really is a 3-and-D type player. He's 6'5", can play on the wing, can play both wing spots, didn't do much for the Spurs until the bubble. In the G League last year, Johnson played in 31 games and averaged over 20 points a game. He was at 20.3 points per game, 5.8 rebounds, 2.1 assists. He only shot 23.7% from beyond the arc, but was 61% on two-point attempts. And I didn't watch any of him in the G League last year, so I don't know how he was, you know, so good in on two-point attempts, if it was mid-range attempts or he's getting into the paint. He wasn't thought of as somebody with a strong handle and somebody who was going to score at the rim much as a draft prospect. He was thought of more as a 3-and-D type player with some slashing and cutting ability. But in the bubble this year, Keldon Johnson shot 64.7% from beyond the arc. He averaged 14 points a game in 26 minutes a game. So eight of his 17 appearances at the NBA level last year came in the bubble, and he started the final game of the year, scored 24 points in 30 minutes on 8 of 12 shooting. There's a lot to like about Keldon Johnson. He can guard multiple positions. He's good size. Now, Derek White, I still say, is the centerpiece because he's got the NBA track record and has some, you know, he's shown that he could be effective at the NBA level. But you're very possibly getting two starter caliber players back in White and Johnson. Johnson's got three more years of team control on his rookie deal, whereas White you'd need to extend. You're getting back the 11th pick, and you're really only giving up the first plus James Johnson. So I don't think the Spurs do this because it admits or it shows that they're admitting that they're ready for a rebuild. I also don't think Popovich is probably all too excited about any of the top prospects in this year's draft. Maybe James Wiseman, but I don't see him being excited about Edwards or LaMelo Ball. but this would be the Spurs admitting a rebuild. It would be the Wolves basically saying, we're ready to win now. Let's plug in. Derek White is a starter with D'Angelo Russell. We'll move on from Malik Beasley. Keldon Johnson might come off the bench, but he's going to be a starting three for this team in the next couple of years. And Rudy Gay is our starting four. Maybe you bring back Hernan Gomez to come off the bench now that you're trading James Johnson. And the Wolves would clearly get better by trading the first pick and James Johnson, getting back Rudy Gay, Derek White, Keldon Johnson, and the 11th pick. They could probably draft a Devin Vassell, certainly somebody like an Aaron Nesmith, maybe Sadiq Bey. Any of those guys are likely going to be there. Not all of them, but some of them will be there at number 11. The Wolves would get better if they made this trade. The problem is you've got to decide if Derek White's worth extending. You're obviously giving up the number one pick and you've lost your trade chip in James Johnson's expiring contract. So this is the type of deal you make if Gerson Rosas thinks the ship has sailed on acquiring a star caliber player back for that first, that number one pick. This is an interesting idea. And the more I've thought about it, the more I've kind of talked myself into not hating it if it were to happen. Again, it's just one of those deals I think the Wolves can do better. But it also shows that there's plenty of teams out there that have the type of assets that they could put together to potentially get this year's first overall pick. And the Wolves would clearly improve themselves. And, you know, with Derek White in your starting backcourt with D'Angelo Russell, this is suddenly goes from probably the 11th best team in the conference to a team clearly fighting for the 7 or 8 seed. And you expect some improvement from him, obviously from Keldon Johnson and the other players on the roster. This would make the Wolves a legitimate playoff contender. I do think Rosas, though, wants to make a bigger splash and not just be a playoff contender, but be considered a playoff team, a likely playoff team to start the year. And that's why I think he's kind of hanging onto his chips, trying to make that big splashy move, like the Ben Simmons move I talked about on Friday. You know, so we'll see if this is the type of thing he'd be open to doing. All right, next up, I want to talk about number 6 on Big Board 3.0. All right, continuing Big Board 3.0, I'm going to quickly list off the first 5 players on the Big Board and then get to number 6. Number 1 is LaMelo Ball. Number 2, Killian Hayes. Number 3, Anthony Edwards. 4, Tyrese Haliburton. And 5, I talked about on Friday's show, that was Devin Vassell, the wing out of Florida State. Today, number 6, his lowest ranking so far in my 3 iterations of the Big Board is Obi Toppin, the big man out of Dayton. Obi Toppin is a dynamic offensive player, and I'll give all the reasons why I think he would be an awesome fit with the Wolves offense, and then I'll talk about the issues, which are literally all defensively. Toppin is a fantastic offensive player. His size is great. He's 6'9" with a 6'11" wingspan, so he can fit in today's NBA as a 4. He can also likely switch onto some threes, although I'll get to his defense here in a second. He is a very good outside shooter. He shot above average from beyond the arc, although he only shot a couple of attempts per game in his last year at Dayton. He shot, 2.6 3-point attempts per game, shot 39%. Overall for his collegiate career, 41.7% from deep. He is super athletic, really good in transition, really good in the pick and roll. He can grab lobs and dunk them from almost any angle. He can catch the ball with his catch radius and athleticism. He can pick and pop with his 3-point shooting ability. He has solid touch in the paint. And the combination of his size, athleticism, scoring touch, and offensive basketball IQ, if you will, he can really kind of catch and score from anywhere in the pick and roll. And it would give the Wolves, it's a pick your poison situation. I mean, you could run the pick and roll with Towns or run it with Toppin, but D'Angelo Russell's fantastic as the ball handler in the pick and roll, as is his backup, Jordan McLaughlin. And you run Toppin and Towns as almost like a modern day Twin Towers sort of a thing, where either one of them can roll, either one of them can pop and be above average 3-point shooters, be dynamic in the paint, be good at drawing fouls. Toppin's about a 70% free throw shooter, so you'd like him to improve a little bit there. But he shot 69.8% on 2-point attempts last year, almost 70%. He's not going to post up, but the Wolves aren't going to run any post ups for him anyways. But he's got the touch to score from almost anywhere. And on top of that, he can actually be a little bit of a playmaker. He handles the ball extremely well for a wing of his size. He knows when to pass out of double teams. He knows when to pass, swing the ball on the perimeter to a teammate. And there really aren't any obvious holes in his game on offense. You'd like him to improve the free throw shooting a little. You'd maybe like him to to maybe shoot a few more threes instead of some of the in between stuff. But generally speaking, you could argue he's the most dynamic and well-rounded offensive player, certainly big man in this draft, and it's really not all that close. So for all those reasons, you put Toppin next to Karl-Anthony Towns, and suddenly this offense is just, I mean, you find a shooter or two to put on the perimeter, and this offense would have to be considered top five, top six in the game immediately. Now, in terms of his issues, they're all defensively. While he's athletic and has great size, he doesn't move well laterally, and perhaps it's an issue with understanding. Certainly, and I'll get to that in a second, because his reads aren't good on defense. But he doesn't get into a stance and slide his feet well. He doesn't stay in front of people well. He doesn't have great recovery either. He doesn't understand or grasp the rotations and help side defense and switching in the pick and roll. When he's in the pick and roll, he doesn't really understand the idea of hedging, or at least hasn't done it, hasn't been asked to do it, hasn't shown the ability to be effective defensively really at all. He's an okay shot blocker and theoretically should get better with his size and athleticism. But again, his reads aren't good. He doesn't know where to be and when defensively. And that's a huge issue, especially when playing with somebody like Towns, who occasionally has had those issues as well. And while Towns, I think, is a really intelligent player, he's had his lapses in his defense, he's been in several different defensive schemes. But plugging a guy like Toppin with little to no defensive awareness next to Towns, who's had some of the same problems, isn't likely going to work out too well. And opposing teams they'd much rather go at Toppin in the pick and roll than Towns. And you'd see a situation where they'd do what they could to switch Toppin onto their best player to try and get easy baskets. And that would be the Wolves' nightmare in this scenario. So unless they're confident that Toppin can improve defensively, can learn how to read the offense better, know when to be and where, improve his positioning, this would be a really tough fit on that end of the floor. On top of all that, he's already 24 years old, which isn't in and of itself a reason not to draft somebody, because if they're good, then they're good. But there isn't a ton of projection remaining. And if he hasn't figured out some of the defensive stuff yet, granted, you know, you talk about having an NBA coaching staff and all that stuff will certainly help, but it's tough to see too much projectability over the next few years for him. Now, he's already there offensively. I really, truly think he's much more parts Amari Stoudemire than he is Derek Williams. I'm not saying he's Amari Stoudemire, but I think his floor is a much better player than say Derek Williams, who is another four who shot the ball well and was athletic, kind of came out of nowhere, was a late bloomer in college. All those things are similar to Obi Toppin. But Toppin's offensive game is so buttoned up and so solid and well-rounded, more so than Derek Williams was. Of course, the former number two pick for the Timberwolves several years ago, and who by all accounts was really a bust in the NBA. I think Toppin's floor is higher. I also think his ceiling is higher. I don't think he'll be Amari Stoudemire. I just don't. I mean, remember, Stoudemire was extremely young when he came into the league, and there was a lot of growth to do there. But I think Toppin can come in and be a starting caliber four in the NBA and be really, really good from day one. The issue is, can you hide him defensively? Can you improve him defensively? Can you find a way for him to contribute and not be a complete negative on that end of the floor? And I'm skeptical about that, but it's certainly possible. And for that reason, he's fallen a little bit on my big board to number six. I don't think the Wolves should take him, certainly number one. I think when the Wolves there's a chance they're going to draft three or four, I thought he was maybe a good target for them. Now, you know, if you're trading back, I think you're looking at a 3-and-D type guy, Devin Vassell, someone like that, more than you are an Obi Toppin because of those defensive concerns. However, if the Wolves trade back and, you know, what happened last year, they traded up and by all accounts, they were going to select Darius Garland. The Cavs took him one pick ahead of them. They took Jarrett Culver. Obi Toppin's not a bad backup plan if they trade back and their number one target's not there. Toppin would be an intriguing fit, to say the least, offensively next to Karl-Anthony Towns and with D'Angelo Russell. But he would be I think, frankly, a disaster defensively. And so it's really hard for me to accurately rank him in terms of where it, you know, do I want the Wolves to ultimately draft him? But the offensive upside is so tantalizing that the Wolves could certainly go all in on that end of the floor. They basically already have to this point. So why not go a step further with Obi Toppin, and if they do indeed trade back? All right, that's all we have for you today here on the special weekend edition of Locked On Wolves. Of course, we are daily Monday through Friday, so I'll be back on Monday with another episode. We will continue the journey through Big Board 3.0, as well as talk about one superstar player who I think could be an interesting trade target to inquire about this offseason, someone I haven't talked about on the show as a potential trade target. So that'll be a part of Monday's show as well. That's all we have for you today here on Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. And also, today's sponsor was Built Bar. They're a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.